everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse Mini for this week. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm just killing time because I can't remember what my name is. I'm just vamping until I remember what my name is.
It's Elliot Kalin.
I'm Elliot Kalin. Thank you so much, Dan. Cool. I appreciate
it. And so normally at this point I would have a labored explanation of what we do on minis, but first, because this is the Max Fun Drive, or it just ended actually.
Yeah, yeah. Real quick, guys. It's the final weekend of the Max Fun Drive. It technically ended, but the books
final
are still
weekend of the Max Fun.
You guys are
drive.
Slowing me down here. I'm all about speed because people should go sign up right now.
Right now.
Because the books are still open over the weekend. For as little as $5 a month, you can get access to our full bursting library of bonus content, filled of all kinds of stuff, as well as the knowledge that you're directly supporting us, the Flophouse. So head over to MaximumFun.org/join and support us now.
Yeah.
Because remember, it's the final weekend of the Max Fun.
If you sneak in over the weekend, they'll never notice. It'll be our little secret.
It's weird. Even though we have headphones on, a dog across the street started barking when Elliot hit the high notes.
Wow.
And they're not going to like it when I say, everybody's pledging for this weekend.
Okay.
The dogs are dancing, guys. They're up on their hind legs. You should see this.
The dog's picking up the phone, calling its cousin, saying this is the sound they've been looking for.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So now we go into the actual show, and on the Flophouse.
The actual show is where we're going right now.
So the general premise of the Flophouse, of course, is that we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it, but then we thought, hey, let's do some extra shows too, and those ones, not very structured. This time around, for Max Fun Drive, we've decided to provide some personalized recommendations for listeners. We had listeners write in with what they felt were, you know, a few pertinent facts about who they were, and then we were all going to come in and try and give personalized bespoke movie recommendations from the Flophouse.
We're like movie doctors.
Yeah.
Yep, okay. Exactly. These recommendations are bespoke. Bespoke.
Just how,
man, like, did you just come from a fucking Chuck E. Cheese? Why are you singing all these songs?
Yeah, and
you're right. I spent my morning, as I do every morning, having my morning coffee at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, and I was going to object to movie doctors after I hit bespoke so hard, but you know what? In a way, doctors are the most bespoke tailors, because if they sew you up, they're doing it right on your body. Mm-hmm. It is specific to you.
Yeah, made to order. Yeah.
There you go.
You can't get surgery off the rack.
No, you can't. And I
at least not until that Black Mirror episode.
All right,
we all look off into the distance. It fades into an episode of Black Mirror where you can get surgery off the rack. David Cronenberg's like, you totally stole this bit from me. And I'm like, chill out, dude.
It's like, you don't have a trademark on future surgery.
And he's like, oh, I can trademark whatever I want. Canadian law is very open for that sort of thing.
Yes. I don't even know if that's true. But let's go on to the first listener. Now, I eased us in, or I made it harder. It's possible I made it harder by choosing one for the first one with the least sort of like lengthy information. This person just provided some bullet points and we have to extrapolate.
This is definitely the one that took me the longest to think of one for.
Yeah, but it's the quickest to read. So I put it at the top.
Yep, sure.
And it goes, hey Peaches, I'm David and I'm a bartender who lives in Chicago, who hates kids, but loves obscure 90s alt rock. So yeah, it's concise. It's a haiku of a question.
Mm-hmm. I actually had a movie pop out right away.
Really? Well, why don't you go
one.
First?
Now,
if
I don't
it's
know,
the one that it took me forever to think of, I'm going to get so mad.
Oh, you're going to be jealous, you mean. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like this is an interesting exercise because a lot of the movies that I came up with, I wouldn't say are like super deep cuts. But I feel like this one kind of ticks a bunch of those boxes. And I'm going to recommend Michael Mann's Thief.
Oh,
it's a great Chicago movie. It's got a definite like blue collar appeal that I kind of feel ties in with. I mean, I don't know where you're bartending, but I feel like service industry workers have a touch of the like blue collar element. There's I don't think there's any kids in this movie, so you don't have to worry about that.
He talks about wanting kids at one point, but you never see any materialize.
Is that that amazing scene where he pulls out his fucking prison collage?
Yes, his collage of terror that is his dream, and at that moment, she should walk out of that date right
there.
She should.
I mean, I've seen a lot. You know, the internet's full of, you know, like Instagram reels and TikTok videos laying out red flags. Number one on that list is a prison collage.
A thief with vision board?
Yeah. A thief vision board prominently featuring Willie Nelson.
I don't know. That softens for me a little bit.
Yeah, it's
so great, and while it's not 90s alt rock, the entire soundtrack is by Tangerine Dream, which is great.
It is a great soundtrack.
I love this movie. It is undeniably a classic. It's great. James Caan gives arguably his best performance, one of them. And it's what the first on-screen appearance of Jim Belushi, I think.
so that's very Chicago.
Yeah, it's very Chicago. Yeah, I love Thief. So was that exactly what you were picking?
It is not. That's a great. I wish I had thought of it. That's a great, great recommendation.
Yeah, like Stuart, I struggled with like, oh, you know, deep cuts. You know, if I recommend something that everyone knows, is that useful? I ultimately decided I will throw all of that out. I'm just going to try and
just going to recommend Star Wars.
Yeah,
no, I'm just gonna,
I mean, if they haven't seen Star Wars, it's going to blow their mind.
Whatever comes to mind after thinking about it will be what I go with, and I will prioritize something that someone may not have heard of. But anyway, that's sort of more general than it has to do with this. But this one was hard for me. I considered Green Book, since it's sort of about a band that gets
you mean Green Room.
Sorry, Green Room.
Very different movie.
I was like, Green Book. Okay, interesting. A movie I know you didn't like. Strange.
Green Room. I haven't even seen Green Book. I don't even know where I just wrote down green and like my phone autocorrects was like, do you mean Green Book? Or
arguably the movie featuring actual skinheads might be less racist.
Yeah, yeah. Green Room.
That's food for thought. That's green food for thought. Vegetables. Yeah.
A harrowing thriller about a band that gets trapped in a bar full of Nazis.
You think Paul McCartney and Wings had a band on the run? Oh boy, this is a band that is really on the run.
That movie features I love Jeremy Saulnier movies, and that fucking arm scene with the fucking box cutter is it's horrifying. And then the rest of the movie, he's just running around and I'm like, what does his arm look like under all that bandage? It looks horrible.
Yeah. I considered that one. I also considered a movie called Color Me Obsessed about the Replacements, but I haven't seen that movie. I just thought
Andy
Rock
in the
Midwest.
I think it's a good idea to recommend movies you've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I stuck only to movies I've seen, and I decided to recommend Dig, the documentary from 2004 about the Brian Jonestown Massacre and the Dandy Warhols, as one band blows up and one is imploding. It is interesting, even if you are not sort of a fan of alternative rock of the time, but as one, you might get a little extra out of it. But it's just sort of a fascinating true life story of, I don't know, what it's like to be in a band, what it's like to deal with sudden fame, what it's like to be the kind of person who is in a band who maybe isn't equipped for sudden fame, all of those things.
And like struggling when you're in a creative endeavor with multiple other people who are maybe difficult, and how tough that can be on, I don't know, a sensitive person or a person who's got like a really hard work ethic.
Are you sub-tweeting us at this point? Is that what's...
Sub-potting, yeah.
So that's what I came up with.
This was, like I said, this was a hard one for me. And so I'm going to recommend a movie that this is...
I don't know that one, Dan. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's good.
Mine is a slight... I didn't know it either. Mine's a slightly qualified recommendation because it's a movie I haven't seen since I was a teenager. But I really latched onto the 90s alt-rock aspect. And I think I'm going to recommend for David, I'm going to recommend the movie Freaked, starring Alex Winter.
Nice.
And co-directed by Alex Winter. This is a comedy that was barely released in the United States. It was from 1993. It stars Alex Winter and Randy Quaid. Mr. T and Brooke Shields and Keanu Reeves are in it. But Keanu Reeves is not quite recognizable because he's under dog man makeup the entire movie, almost. And this is a movie that I'm sure there are jokes in it that do not age well, since it is about people being kidnapped and turned into sideshow performers. But I remember seeing it as a kid and thinking, like, as a teenager and a kid, and say, like, because he used to play on HBO a lot, that it was really funny, and being surprised that there wasn't much being done with it otherwise. And apparently it was originally meant to be a Butthole Surfers movie. And
awesome.
And that got changed quite a bit during pre-production and production. But it's one that I bet you'll laugh at a few times. It's got a very 90s alt-rock, I feel like, sensibility to it. So that's Freaked. But again, I'm sure there are jokes in there that have not aged well, considering this is a 30-year-old movie that was, I think, supposed to be real, like, edgy at the time. So I guarantee you there's stuff in there that is less sensitive than it should be. I just don't know what.
Nice. All right.
So write in, tell us if Freaked holds up.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, thank you.
I've actually never seen it, but I do like the Butthole Surfers a lot, and I do like Alex Winter a lot.
So I feel like it was on HBO a fair amount.
It was on HBO
a
lot as a kid, but I remember some very funny jokes from it. I don't remember all of it, but I remember funny jokes in it.
Maybe I'll just wander around the Roku channel or Tubi and see if it'll turn up. Like yesterday when I decided to watch Evil Toons.
Yeah.
Oh, that's one I've never actually seen. I only saw it at the video store.
Guess what? It rules.
Freaked is one of those movies that, yeah, like either it exists no place, and except for maybe like someone who uploaded it to YouTube.
Yeah. It is on
YouTube
in its entirety.
It exists every place. Well, like it's one of those.
Oh, I see. Yeah, one of those movies where by some strange vicissitude of reality, yeah, it's either it either disappeared off the face of the earth, or it is in a 4-pack of movies you can buy at the grocery store.
Yeah. It's playing on the like screen at the bus stop.
Why is it that Jake Gyllenhaal's Bubble Boy is readily? It seems like it's available everywhere.
Yeah, no one wanted it even at the time, and yet. Now you can't walk down the street without slipping on a copy of Bubble Boy.
No, swing a dead cat. That dead cat will say, please, I hope I don't hit a copy of Bubble Boy this time.
Can we swing a different dead animal?
Sorry. Swing a dead one. Kennedy and you're bound to hit a copy of Bubble Boy.
This one is from Emily Last Name Withheld. Emily writes...
Emily and Perry, yeah.
Hey guys, here's the pertinent details for my personalized pick. Almost 30, female, in a film and TV production program. Have large blind spots for some cinema classics I want fixed. Enjoyer of 80s horror, 90s trash, and bona fide TCM classics. So all three floppers have a chance of making the best recommendation. Big fan of the show. Would really appreciate getting some recommendations from my favorite podcasters. Keep it sleazy. Emily, last name withheld.
Now, if what I'm doing right now is not sleazy, do I have to up the sleaze factor to meet Emily's standards?
I feel like I really have to maintain. It says keep it sleazy. So.
I feel like I really latched onto the sleazy part of this one with my recommendation.
Well, that's the thing. So Emily says, enjoyer of 80s horror, 90s trash, and bona fide TCM classics. Now, I can only assume by, process of elimination that I'm supposed to be the 90s trash, because I assume that Stu is 80s horror and you're the TCM classics, but those are also things I enjoy. So look, don't flatten
you can,
us into
you,
one thing.
Dan, you can that's all you I'm, contain multitudes.
Yeah. But that being said, because I presume that was mine, I went in that direction.
Okay.
And I would like to recommend an erotic thriller from the 90s.
Keeping it sleazy.
1995. Directed by Peter Hall, starring Antonio Banderas and Rebecca De Mornay. It is called Never Talk to Strangers. It has the two things I really like in a 90s erotic dumb thriller.
I thought you were going to say this is the two things I really like, boobs and butts.
those are amongst the many things, but in a 90s...
That's in the constellation of things that you enjoy, yeah.
Yeah, if there's a word cloud, those would be some of the larger words. But no, I... for a 90s erotic thriller, it has the things I like, which is number one, a utterly implausible, weird, giallo style like explanation for everything that's going on that would fall apart in life, but is perfect in the context of one of these thrillers, and a little like genuine sexiness. There's a scene in this where Rebecca De Mornay bites Antonio Banderas' butt. And it's like a thing that, like, I don't know, to see actors doing, like, you don't usually see that kind of, like, goofy intimacy.
Yeah. Not even in Ghoulies.
On screen. Yes.
No.
Yeah.
As we've covered.
The movie that promises a butt will be bit. But that would be a great tagline for a movie. A butt will be bit. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a silly movie, but it's kind of impressive that it actually feels like sexy at parts. So that's the one I'm going with.
I mean, I think it probably speaks to the charisma of those two leads.
Yeah. Yeah. Very sexy people.
I'm going to recommend something that I think, in a way, if you look at it from a certain angle, it kind of hits all the criteria of this recommendation. Because it was a something that I did not see at the time of its release, and I didn't see until a little bit later. I think it definitely hits 80s horror. It's a little sleazy, and it also has a little bit of a TCM vibe. I'm going to recommend Fred Dekker's Night of the Creeps, a movie I'm sure we've mentioned on the podcast before. It stars that hunk, Tom Atkins. Uh-oh, look out, ladies. Lock up your daughters.
What?
Cause
so it's two generations.
Because their boyfriends are dead. It's a zombie movie involving brain worms. There's bits that are in black and white from ye olden times, and there's current stuff. It's great. It's super funny. It's one of those movies that I'm like, if I had seen this movie as a teenager, it would have, I don't feel like it would have changed me. It's just one of those things that I'm like, how did I not see this earlier?
Surprised you didn't, because I saw it as a teenager.
It hits like ticks every box of what I like in a movie.
Yeah.
It's stylish. There's a fucking, a morgue attendant who shows up with a fucking sandwich. I love that shit. Yeah, it's so great. It's got great one-liners. Two thumbs up. If you haven't seen Night of the Creeps and you like any of the things that I've mentioned.
Or if you like James Gunn's Slither, which is essentially a remake.
Which is very much an update in some ways of Night of the Creeps, yeah.
But also very good and fun.
Slither's very good and very fun. Is it as good as Night of the Creeps? I'm sorry, James Gunn. You're not as good as Night of the Creeps. But hey, you know what? Few are. So if you haven't seen Night of the Creeps, go check it out. It's so much fun. I love it.
I'm going to recommend a movie that I love, that I think ticks off the classic movie box. And I don't know about the sleaze box, but it's certainly got an eroticism to it. Yeah, we covered sleaze, but this is an erotic movie in some ways, although it's mostly emotional erotics. And that's Black Narcissus. That's right, starring Deborah Kerr. I was about to say David Kerr, which is not a person. Deborah Kerr. And this is a
Deborah Carradine.
This is a Powell and Pressburger film. It is about some nuns in the Himalayas who are being forced to confront basically the buried feelings of loneliness and kind of erotic stirring that they do not want to feel or give into as they are nuns in the Himalayas. And it's shot in the classic Powell and Pressburger super lush color. Everything looks beautiful. It looks gorgeous. It is a really like sensual movie in a classy way. Dan's, it sounds like, is kind of a sensual movie in a sleazy way. And this is a sensual movie in a classy way. It's a movie where no one bites anybody's butts. But at one point, a woman puts on lipstick and it is like a thunderbolt coming out of the sky, like that, like an erotic thunderbolt, just her putting on that lipstick. The male character in it, he rides around on a very small horse, which is accurate to where the movie takes place, but it does look a little ridiculous. So you have to try not to laugh at how small his horse is. But otherwise, it's a really, really tight thriller, but also a gorgeous looking movie. That's Black Narcissus.
Did you see? Didn't they do like a
mini series
and a mini series recently? Did you see that?
I didn't watch it at all. Partly because I feel like I've gotten to a point now, like the same way that there's like this Great Expectations miniseries that's out now. And there's like, I used to be like, oh, I want to see that new version of the story I like. But I've gotten to the point now where I'm like, I love that old version of it. I don't love it because of the story, for Black Narcissus at least. I love it because of the way they make that movie. So I'm not really that interested in how someone who's not Powell and Pressburger make it. But I've heard good things about that miniseries. So, but I would say it is not, I'm not saying don't watch it. But I'm saying that's not my recommendation, is that miniseries. My recommendation is the movie. From 1947.
This next one, so we started out with very little information. This one includes diagrams. So.
I feel really proud about this one.
Okay.
Yeah, me too. I feel like I've got a good one for this. The other two, the other two I recommended were crap. Those were bad recommendations.
I gotta admit, the diagram system is helpful, but let's get into it. So this is from Aaron, last name withheld, who says, "Hey Peaches, first time, long time, etc. Since I have found myself aligned with each of your movie tastes over the years, I thought the way I would approach the question would be to give each of you a constellation of three movies that I like, and I think that are in your respective wheelhouses, and ask you to give me a recommendation for a film that is a good interpolation of the three. I hope this makes sense, and I've provided a diagram to help. If it doesn't make sense, then just think about what might complete a four-film DVD collection, given the first three, Aaron, last name withheld, and there's a little diagram. It's kind of like a constellation, as he says. It's a triangle with movie one, movie two, and movie three at the points, and inside it says your recommendation here. So let's just do it in the order we have. Stu's constellation.
Yep.
Movie one, Dread, 2012.
Okay. Dread, yep.
Movie two, Old Boy, 2003.
Yep.
Movie three, Ex Machina, which appears to be where. I guess he's adding dates just to differentiate when there might be confusion. I was like, he seemed to lose interest in giving a date after the movie.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so I feel like the center of those three, that diagram, the center of those three, is none other than Universal Soldier: Day of Reckoning, the fourth movie in the franchise, because it's a revenge story. It's a movie that is set up by a home invasion by they're like walking corpse soldier guys.
Like they're reanimated soldier corpses,
guys, which are kind of like robots in Ex Machina, that science gone awry. And the hero, played by Scott Adkins, who is getting a lot of buzz right now because he's one of the baddies in the new John Wick movie, goes on a rampage to try and get revenge. Did I already say it's similar to Old Boy? And it's got action scenes that are bonkers and so violent and bloody. There's a scene in like a sporting goods store that is absolutely nuts. I highly recommend this. If you have any interest in seeing a very violent, very strange action movie, I highly recommend Universal Soldier 4, which is the best in the franchise.
Okay. So next is my constellation. That's me, Dan. It says movie one, The Sweet Smell of Success, two, Miller's Crossing, and three, Vertigo. So this is one of these cases where I'm not going to say something unknown, really, but it felt like appropriate to me.
Star Wars.
Between the
that would blow people's minds if they hadn't seen it.
If they've never seen it.
Between The Sweet Smell of Success, Miller's Crossing, and Vertigo, I sensed sort of a common tone of sort of romantic cynicism. I mean, which, you know, makes sense. Like, I think cynicism is kind of like romanticism that is hoping for the best, but fearing the worst and often getting the worst.
It's romanticism getting defensive. Yeah.
Yeah. And they all sort of have a theme of corruption as well. I went with Touch of Evil, the Orson Welles film, starring himself, Charlton Heston, Janet Leigh, and Marlena Dietrich from 1958.
And Akeem Tamaroff.
I feel like it shares the visual flair that all those movies have, and it has the same kind of tone of a story of sort of trying to make a way through a tangled, cynical world. And some people get through and some people don't. And that's all I'll say about that.
I mean, you know, we keep hemming and hawing about the fact that some of these are unknown, but I've never seen Touch of Evil. Partly, obviously, because I was too busy watching Evil Tunes last night.
Sure.
You did have the choice. Well, yeah, you could have priorities. Seen either.
Those are, yeah.
There are two evil films in front of him.
Yeah. And one of them is Tunes. The other one just says Touches.
He like looked it up. He's like, does Touch of Evil have any tunes in it? And Google told him no. So.
And I'm like, it doesn't say it in the description, but maybe I'll have to go over to Reddit next.
I mean, yeah. Dennis Weaver's performance, it's Dennis Weaver who owns the hotel, right? His performance is pretty cartoonish, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Anyway, Elliot's constellation.
Okay, so I guess he doesn't own the hotel, he works the hotel. Okay, so yeah, what was my constellation?
Yeah. Elliot's Constellation. Movie one, Tokyo Story. Two, 12 Angry Men, 1957. Three, The Wages of Fear.
All right. So I think I've aced this one. What do these movies have in common? Wages of Fear and 12 Angry Men, they're both about angry men who are confronted with some kind of conflict, some kind of obstacle or struggle, either physical or emotional, or in the case of Wages of Fear, both. And Tokyo Story is about people in Japan whose lives are not quite turning out the way they want it to. And whereas each of these movies has a certain amount of realism to it. It's not, none of them are, Wages of Fear, even considering it's a movie about trucks full of explosive chemicals, none of them feel sensational. And so I think I aced this. I decided to go with a Japanese movie. Why not? And I picked High and Low. Akira Kurosawa's High and Low, starring Toshirô Mifune, but don't let that blind you to the fact that it also features Tetsuya Nakade, another one of Japan's great leading men, although here he's in a supporting role. And High and Low is the story of a man who, Toshirô Mifune plays a man who is about to embark on the hostile takeover of a shoe company, only to find out, he's a rich man, he's about to risk everything, only to find out that his chauffeur's son has been kidnapped under the misapprehension on the part of the kidnappers that it was his son. And now he's been faced with a ransom. And is he going to pay this ransom for another man's son? What can he do and still live with himself? And it's a movie that is also kind of, especially for a three-movie constellation challenge, is neatly divided up into three parts, pretty much. The part where it's dealing with the ransom and the kidnapper, the police investigation, and then the final confrontation between our high and low people. And it's all about life in a Japan of income inequality and social inequality. It is about the ethical struggles that one has to face when they are taken outside of their own comfort zone. And it's super tense, and it's shot beautifully. It's the opening of it is almost like the most tense play you've ever seen, and then the movie keeps kind of opening up, and then it closes down again, and it's just really good. So High and Low, Akira Kurosawa's version. There are other movies called High and Low. I have not seen them. This is the one I'm talking about, and not Sweet and Low. That is a sweetener, an artificial sweetener, and not Sweet and Low Down, which is a different movie.
High and Lois. That's a comic strip.
The least funny comic strip maybe ever made. Yeah,
sister of Beetle Bailey, who lives in the suburbs.
Kurosawa's High and Lois had been good?
Kurosawa's High and Lois would have been very interesting. I mean, Kurosawa was going to make Runaway Train at one point, so you know the man has variety and has varied skills. Now, here's the thing. What if Beetle Bailey was the Beetle in Sweeney Todd? How would that play be different? Instead of Beetle Bamford working for Judge Turpin, it was Beetle Bailey.
I have tickets for Sweeney Todd this weekend after we move.
And wow,
I'm so
Dan's
excited
flexing on all you
because
hoes.
The reviews have been stellar for this.
Yeah, I really want to see it. I saw the last revival of Sweeney Todd. I saw it twice, but that wasn't a full revival. It wasn't a full scale, like the last Broadway revival. It wasn't like a full scale, full orchestration one. I really hope I get to see this one.
And this one has National Treasure Annalee Ashford in it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Man, she
Jay
is
Grobes.
The best.
Also Jay Grobes.
And the kid from Stranger Things.
Which one? That show's
They're
full
all
of
kids.
Kids.
They're all kids. Yeah. And Paul Reiser, he's not a kid. But Dan, you
Sean
have to,
Astin,
you have to,
he was a kid once.
It's true. But you need to jump up in the middle of the play and say, where's Beetle Bailey? Where's Beetle Bailey? Try to get a chant going.
I can tell you right now that attempt will fail.
Gang, as I mentioned right up top, we're right at the end of the Max Fun Drive. And if this is your first time here, the Max Fun Drive is the one time a year that we ask our listeners, you, for financial support. The Flophouse is primarily funded by listener support. That means us, me, Dan, Elliot. And in exchange of by supporting us, supporters at the $5 a month and higher level get access to, as I mentioned, a big old pile of Flophouse bonus content, including multiple actual play role-playing game adventures, movie commentaries, crossover episodes, and more. Your imagination just, oh, wow, it's nuts.
Your voice is really selling these things.
Yeah, yep. Plus, new and upgrading members will also earn additional rewards like show-specific stickers, an apron that's really cool and looked really great on Dan when he wore it the other night.
Say it again. It's a great apron. I use it every day. It's a sturdy, comfortable, well-made apron that looks great.
It's not just an apron. It's a great Prin.
All right, well, forget what I was going to say. Alex, burn this episode. Never release it.
Alex, loop me saying that. And then turn it give it a
Alex,
dumb beat.
Alex, if you can hack into the U.S. Census records and delete Dan from existence, that would be great.
And certainly don't loop it up and turn it into a hot new dance song. Okay, so there's also a cookbook full of Max Fun hosts' recipes, including a recipe from me and Dan. What? And did I mention that in addition to supporting the Flophouse, some of your money also goes to support the operation of the Max Fun Network that is currently in the process of becoming entirely employee-owned. In a world where media companies continue to get shittier and treat their employees and contributors worse and worse,
know that by
supporting us, you're supporting positive change in the world of entertainment, which is a big fucking deal. So why don't you head over to MaximumFun.org/join and support us today, please.
Vice President, former Vice President, current President Joe Biden. Everyone. Mm-hmm. Sorry. That's all I get. Like, big fucking deal is all I can think of. I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah. That was an oblique thing to say.
Alex, loop that.
Alex, you can cut it out if you want to. That's a thing that can go. Hey, the next one is from Laurel, last name withheld. Laurel writes, "Hello, flop stars. I've been listening for more than a decade now, but this is my first time writing in. The Flophouse was the first podcast I ever listened to after it was recommended by a man I had a crush on. While I haven't spoken to the man in years, at least he gave me the Flophouse. I'd love to get some personalized recommendations from you." I mean, they're both listeners. I don't know why you...
Sorry about that. I forgot he was a listener.
I normally...
Hey, would you sorry I said that. Would you consider pledging MaximumFun.org/join?
Yeah, it's not like he's like, yeah, you should check out this podcast to wipe your ass with.
We apologize to every man who may have recommended a podcast at some point who's listening. I mean, not other podcasts. Fuck those guys. I normally
keep
gravitate.
Qualifying it.
I normally gravitate to movies that move at a slower pace, particularly those that are woman-led. Some examples include Brooklyn, Spirited Away, Persepolis, Midsommar, and Roma. My favorite movies from the past year were Women Talking and Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
Very similar in some ways.
I also enjoy lighthearted musicals like In the Heights and Yesterday, and hated La La Land. Looking forward to hearing what you have to recommend. Laurel, last name withheld. I got one that I think is genuinely underseen and I think might be the ticket. It's called Marjorie Prime. It's from 2017. It was directed by Michael Almereyda. I hope I said that correctly. It's about an elderly woman who uses a service that creates a holographic projection of a young version of her deceased husband. So it stars Lois Smith as the older woman, with this holographic companion, and it's based on a play, and I've seen reviews for it. I loved it. I've seen reviews for it from elsewhere. They're like, oh, it's too much like a play, but sometimes I feel like that's okay in movies. I feel like we have a very restrictive view. Like, there are ways to sort of embrace the fact that it's like a play and not run away from it. Like, I feel like sometimes movies fail by running away from the essential qualities of a play. I don't know.
Yeah, as long as it's the best way to tell the story, like, who cares if it's like a play?
Yeah, but it's got Lois Smith, like I said, John Hamm's in it, Tim Robbins and Gina Davis show up, and it's good to see their faces again. Haven't been doing a lot. Audrey also was I'm saying I missed them as performers. I'm not trying to like insult either of them.
He was the player, Elliot.
The dubious look on my face was only the idea that they're not doing a lot because they do work.
Gina Davis does all that charity work, right?
She's an archer. There are people I'm fond of who had bigger parts in movies past who I don't see that much. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying they don't work. anyway.
You're just mad that Earth Girls are complicated now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's Gina
Davis. Also, I wanted to say that, you know, I was looking over these and thinking about them while Audrey happened to be around. And I have not seen this movie, but she suggested Petite Maman for this one, which sounded
hell
like,
yeah,
from everything I've read about it, sounds like it might be right.
Yeah,
up your
I haven't seen that yet, and I really want to.
It's by my girl, Celine.
what do you guys have?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I would have recommended Portrait of a Lady on Fire, but I recommend that all the time. I love that movie. I'm crazy for it. So I'm going to recommend a movie that's a little more Stewart-y.
It's called Castle Freak.
It's called, it's a you know how much energy, it like how much effort it required for me not to just answer Castle Freak for all six of these guys. I was so tempted.
I mean, I did see a twinkle in Stuart's eye when I mentioned that we were doing this before, that I was like, is he going to do that?
Uh-huh. You're like, how much of a stinker is Stuart?
Mm-hmm. Is he a little stinker or is he a big stinker? Yeah.
Well, I think, Stuart, you can take a break from stinkering since I think as you showed us, or was it Dan showed us, Paul Schrader on Wikipedia was now listed as the director of Heart Beeps.
Oh, wow. That's weird. I'm glad yeah, the reality matches my perception.
A big stinker at this point.
Yeah, when it, what'll happen when I start using my stinker powers for good, guys? Who knows?
Who knows?
Sky's the limit.
Like a stinker Suicide Squad.
Suicide stinks, yeah.
I think it would be Stinkicide Squad. Okay, so I'm going to recommend a movie that's a little bit slow. It's woman-led. And reminds me of some of the movies that she mentioned. I'm going to recommend a movie from 2009 directed by Ty West called House of the Devil. It's about a young college student who gets hired to babysit, but it immediately gets weird, and she spends most of the movie just wandering around a spooky old house before it gets very terrifying. It does also feature Tom Noonan, who is always welcome to see. And it also features director of Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig. Whoa, whoa. It's great. It's part of that whole mumblegore family of movies. You know, the Joe Swanberg and Adam Wingard and all those guys. It's so if you're looking for like a quiet, interesting, kind of slow and scary horror movie that I feel like probably influenced a lot of the current generation of indie horror that is popping up, check out The House of the Devil.
I'm going to recommend another scary movie, but this one's not horror scary. It's scary in that it's a real situation that is scary to be in. And that is the movie Wendy and Lucy, directed by Kelly Reichardt. Reichardt, who did, you may know her from, she did, what, First Cow recently?
Yeah.
She also did the movie Old Joy. She's had a bunch of movies. Meek's Cut Off is another one of hers that I like a lot. This is a story starring Michelle Williams as Wendy. She is a homeless woman who is traveling with her dog, Lucy. And it's a really heartbreaking movie about how when you don't have resources, a relatively small problem can become a catastrophe and lead to your life dissolving around you. And Michelle Williams is really great in it. The movie is really understated, but it still has this feeling of like kind of inevitable dread throughout it. And it's just, it's really good. And it's just super heartbreaking. It's slow. It takes its time. It's not one of those fast cutting, you know, hyper intense movies about a homeless woman who's losing possession of her dog. You know, it's not Taken with a dog, you know. But that's what I would recommend for you, Laurel, Wendy, and Lucy.
And I recommend Taken with the Dog as the title for our next collaborative screenplay.
Taken with the Dog. But I am taken with this dog. This dog. I just cannot stop thinking about this dog.
We got another one here. It's from Kate Last Name Withheld, who writes, my hopefully fun bullet points of interest are, we'll be sure to internally judge these bullet points. Some of my favorite movies are Videodrome, True Stories, Army of Darkness, and Fire Walk With Me. I'm into musicals, schlock, and general silliness, and body horror. I will watch just about anything, but can only get my girlfriend to join me if the plot doesn't involve a lot of secondhand embarrassment. I have seen The Velocipaster over 7 times and am really into dinosaurs. Thank you from Kate.
Oh, man. Elliot's like, have you ever seen Jurassic Park?
Yeah. Are you, Are you champing at the bit to get in there?
No, the thing is, I was really stymied by this because I wanted to recommend a dinosaur movie, but other than Jurassic Park, which I'm sure Kate has seen, there's really not that many good movies about dinosaurs.
I got a dino.
Great. I'll delete my recommendation of Baby. I mean, I got a Lost Legend.
I was like, is it Baby, a Lost Legend, or is it Tammy and the T-Rex?
And the T-Rex is my recommendation.
That's what you said. I was guessing. So, Tom, why don't you talk about Tammy and the T-Rex?
Well, it fits in with your enjoyment of schlock, general silliness, and body horror because it's about a girl whose boyfriend dies and then his brain gets put – well, he doesn't die. He dies because his brain, I guess, gets put into this robotic T-Rex. I can't
that
remember the actual –
that would kill detail. You in that real would, life, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now she's dating a dinosaur and she doesn't really let it stop her.
That's
she,
an even
you know,
better
transcends.
Title. She's dating a dinosaur is an even better title for the movie.
It's true. So it's a love story between a gal and a dino, and it has, if you watch the R-rated version, the cut that was originally supposed to be the movie and then got restored recently, it's got a lot of gore in it, and it's a silly, schlocky horror comedy that I think in the restored version, I never watched the old one. I always saw it on these lists of, like, bad movies, like, I think Tammy the T-Rex knows exactly what it's doing. I don't think it's that kind of like bad movie. Like there are elements that aren't up to the ultimate.
I mean, it's not a good movie.
Yeah, but it also is totally conscious of like how silly. Like it was a movie that was, I think, literally written in a weekend because someone involved had access to a dinosaur puppet. That's what I heard, at least a long time ago when I read about Tammy the T-Rex.
That story gets mixed up a lot. They actually had access to a Tammy, and they wrote the movie around that.
Makes sense.
Well, make sure all the other elements are as easy to realize as possible, and then they read the script. God damn it, Carrie!
What are you doing? The giant dinosaur?
Okay, so that was my recommendation. I also had an alternate in case someone else said Tammy the T-Rex, which is just Phantom of the Paradise. I'll just mention it. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. But what do you guys have?
Yeah. I got to see that at least one of the masks from Phantom of the Paradise is in Guillermo del Toro's personal collection.
Cool.
I'm going to recommend something that I think hits a lot of those criteria. It's by a big-name director, and it's his debut feature. That's right, Bad Taste by Peter Jackson. Mm. It is silly. It's schlocky. It's body horrific, and it's very homemade. I think it took him, 3 years worth of Sundays to make this movie?
At least.
And he, made all the creatures' masks in his mom's oven. That's why they're shaped in a specific way. Like, all the guns are homemade. It's great. It is about an alien invasion on Earth and a squad of elite anti-alien task force guys in New Zealand who have to stop it. And it's so much fun, and it's so interesting, and clearly you're watching this movie and you're like, oh, wow, this guy has it. And it's so much fun to see a filmmaker who clearly loves movies and clearly has a talent and a flair for it get to make this like tiny little movie. It's great. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Highly recommend it. And it's gross.
It's a super fun movie. And I don't know if this is this happens with every version of it, but if you watch the version that was on Amazon Prime, I don't know if it still is, and you have the captions on, for some reason, the captions describe the musical soundtrack as you're watching it.
Great.
So it'll be like tense electronic music. And then it'll be like, rat-a-tat timpani drums. And I was like, this is an amazing touch to add to this, that they're describing how the music sounds. So here's the thing. I have a double feature of movies to recommend. I couldn't think of one I really want to recommend with dinosaurs, but this is a movie that, is it body horror? I'm not sure. There's two scenes in particular that are kind of body horror-ish, I guess, but it's a movie we've talked about a lot on the show. That's Possession from 1981, directed by Andrzej Żuławski. I'm not sure entirely how to pronounce his name, but starring Sam Neill and Isabella Gianni in one of her greatest performances. And it is the story of the disillusion of a marriage against a backdrop of spy stuff in Berlin and also what appears to be an alien creature that Isabella Gianni is leaving her husband for. And there's not that much physical horror in it, aside from two major scenes, but there's such a sense of incredible emotional creepiness throughout the entire thing. And the whole movie, it feels like you're watching a film that fell through another dimension. Like it's just different enough in everything that happens in it. And the other thing, you mentioned musicals and goofy stuff. So I would say after Possession, then I want you to watch Dames from 1934. This is a Busby Berkeley musical with Dick Powell and Ruby Keeler and Guy Kibbe and Zazu Pitts, two of the great comedy supporting actors of the 30s are in there. And it's just a super goofy, it's the silliest of the Busby Berkeley movies. It's just super goofy and silly. There's a great number in it called The Girl at the Ironing Board, which takes place entirely at a turn of the century laundry, and where the women are all dancing with shirts and stuff. And it has the song I Only Have Eyes for You, which is just the way they do it is beautiful. And it's where, if you remember in Gremlins 2, there's the part where there's a giant face of the lady gremlin and the eye iris is open and then the lady gremlin comes out of it. That's taken right from this number. And so it's—
Are you sure it wasn't the other way around?
You know what? You're right. You're right. They Babylon'd this, and the movie from back then was inspired by the movie from now. Mm-hmm. So that's my double feature for you, Kate, is Possession and Dames.
All right. Well, we got one more personalized—
I think we're nailing the assignment today, guys. I think we're really crushing it.
Everyone's doing a great job. I just want to say, you guys put such thought into this. You've got great recommendations. I hope mine reach the same level, and I hope our listeners are enjoying it. And I hope that they enjoy it so much that they go to MaximumFun.org/join and pledge their support, and maybe we'll do more of these. What do you think, guys? What do you think?
Oh,
we'll
maybe.
Do more recommendations that are bespoke. Bespoke.
Yep.
Okay, well, this one is from Alex, last name withheld, in Dayton, Ohio, who writes, "Peaches, my cultural taste buds are blown out. Conventional narrative arcs bore me. I need my plots to be unpredictable, even broken, just to feel something. I can't tell the difference between ironic and sincere appreciation anymore. A few of my favorite movies of the 21st century are The Room, The Lighthouse, Cats, and Titane. Hit me with the weird shit, guys. Show me that the world still has the capacity to surprise." Again, that's from Alex in Dayton, Ohio. Man,
now,
I feel like
can I go
Alex
first
and
on
I
this
are
one?
In the same boat.
Yeah, because Dan's in that boat. His taste buds don't taste anything entertainment-wise anymore. I'm really happy with my suggestion here. Alex, I don't know if you've seen this. Maybe you have, but I wanted to recommend The Forbidden Room from 2015. That's a Guy Madden movie. And if you want a movie that's going to surprise you, The Forbidden Room will surprise you because it is constantly changing what movie it is. Every 6 minutes or so, you never quite know what you're going to expect from it. By the end, the movie itself is going bonkers all over the place. It has an original song by Sparks that is available nowhere else but in this movie. And I don't know if you're familiar with Guy Madden's work, but Guy Madden specializes in making movies that are modern movies but look like they were made a long time ago, but are dealing with subject matter that they would not have dealt with in old, old movies. And it's got an amazing cast. Our old buddy Udo Kier appears in it as a guy. I'll just tell you about this one sequence. This is the Sparks song that features Udo Kier starring as a man who is so obsessed with butts that he keeps going to a doctor to have parts of his brain scraped out so that he doesn't become obsessed with butts anymore. And it's not working, so he keeps having to get more and more of his brain scraped out. This is just one short story in this movie. And it's a really great, just bonkers movie. So that's The Forbidden Room, one of Guy Madden's more recent movies. And just there's a lot of delight in it.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a lot of sort of weirdo horror that I was thinking of, like stuff that you really rides that line where you're like, okay, I don't know if from one direction, this is kind of brilliant. I don't know what their intention was. It also is total nonsense. And like, because everything else is working, you know, the nonsense translates as dream logic and it's kind of fascinating. Like, there's a lot of stuff like
I feel that. Like this one was tailor-made for Dan. Because you, I think out of the three of us, you have the most experience with like wacko, stuff that it rides that line between great and totally horrible.
Yes, and there's like stuff that occurred to me that I almost recommended, Paganini Horror, Nightmare Weekend, Boarding House. These are all I think, classics of that type. I decided to go with a movie that I've recommended before on the podcast from 1993, Doppelganger, written and directed by Israeli filmmaker Abby Nesher, starring a youngish Drew Barrymore, like ingenue age, who has possibly a doppelganger that's following her around and causing murderous mayhem, until a pair of double reveals at the end of the movie that are just the kind of like outlandish that I was talking about before. But it's a movie that really, for me, I watch it and I'm like, can I say this isn't working? Because I'm enjoying it so much. Mm-hmm. Like,
if you're genuinely getting pleasure from it, then it's working on some level. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing with kink, guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, there's not much else I want to say, because saying it would spoil the experience, but I recommend it a lot.
I'm going to recommend a big, messy movie that you might love or you might not like at all.
Star Wars.
I'm recommending a movie from 2006 called Southland Tales.
Oh, interesting. Interesting choice.
I mean, I feel like this fits that, like, it was a long delayed movie. It was a long hyped movie. It was Richard Kelly's follow up to Donnie Darko, right?
Yeah.
And there were like prequel comics and shit.
It was
supposed to
be the middle chapter of an enormous multimedia thing, that there's going to be comics, and I forgot what the other section of it was. It was a hugely ambitious thing, and it means that the movie has no beginning and no real ending.
And it's set in like a futuristic Los Angeles. It's kind of this like ensemble story where characters are all doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
John Lovitz is like a corrupt bad cop, and Wallace Shawn is supposed to be a real sexy character. Like, he was deliberately casting people against type in the movie. So like The Rock is a real nervous, anxious guy, and
and there's like musical numbers. It's one of those things where, yeah, for somebody who is, an explorer on the far reaches of cinema experience.
The line between pain and pleasure.
Yeah, this might exactly be for you, or you might not like it at all, like many people at the time did.
Honestly, that's a movie where I remember seeing that in the theaters, being super excited because I really loved Donnie Darko, and not liking it at all, except for John Lovitz and The Rock's performances in them. And I think that if I watched it now without the baggage of, this is the new movie from the guy who made Donnie Darko, I think I might like it a lot. It's such a bonkers movie.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat. I haven't watched it since this. Like, there was enough of a growing, like, hey, is this good actually contingent that I watched it? But I think I was still in that disappointment mode. Whereas now, I don't know.
I feel like it's gotten a bit of cultural reevaluation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, Stuart kind of said it before, but like, if you watch these movies, like, write us back. Let us know about the recommendations. If you just, like, if you only find time for one, or you've seen some of the movies, like, let us know then. Or let us know if you program a film festival of three movies, one from each of us, and let us know how we did.
Yeah.
I would be very curious.
Did we nail it? Guys, as I've mentioned before, this is the last show of the 2023 Max Fun Drive, and it's been a really great drive so far. We've had Twitch streams. I think Dan participated in some kind of pancake contest. No more details. We had a very special episode. We had a very special episode of the Peach Pit. There's been some great bonus content dropped, and all that is possible because of your support. So I just want to take this last break to deeply and sincerely thank all of our supporters. You make this show possible. All three of us have faced various financial turbulence over the years, and thanks to you, we've been able to continue making this fun, silly show a priority in our lives. Very literally, you keep food in Elliot's children's mouths.
Yes. And it goes into their stomach. It doesn't just stay in the mouth. It goes down the throat into the stomach.
Oh, thank God.
You keep a roof over Dan's head.
Okay.
And protein powder in my belly.
Seems less important.
It's the only nutrition he gets these days.
I guess so.
Not based on my DMs, Dan. we love you, and we are so lucky to have found such a funny, dedicated, talented, and generous audience. From the bottom of our hearts, we thank you. And one more time, if you'd like to support the Flophouse, please head over to MaximumFun.org/join.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said.
Yes, thank you. And thank you to all the listeners who wrote in and got recommendations. I think that this is something, like, we have a lot of extra ones that we didn't get to. I think this is something that we will revisit in the future, and I will get to maybe some of the other ones that didn't wind up in this batch.
Yeah.
This was fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, and listeners.
It made us think a little bit.
And we got to talk about movies we like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thanks to Alex Smith, our producer. He is at Howell Dottie on various socials. But for this episode of The Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Ellie Kalin.
Bye.
I remembered my name that time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.